number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Click and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Leg down, smack on the ankle.
Next time, the right time.
You know the night.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio
is now. This is what we do.
From the Quick and Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
Just when you thought the NBA was starting to lose its fun factor. Golden State Warriors are now 20-0. And Steph Curry is not done entertaining you, by the way, in case you were wondering. He's not. He had 26 points in the third quarter alone, en route to a 40-point night. As the Warriors beat the Charlotte Hornets tonight, they are now 20-0. And you know what's funny about this 20-0 run is that, and I know they haven't played that. You know, it's 20 games. It's a quarter of the season. There's still a lot of games left, and you're getting through a lot of teams, and you're kind of on a roll. But who knows what the winter will be like? You might get into a rut. All of this is irrelevant. This Western Conference is still pretty darn good. Some of these teams are really good. And the Warriors are 20-0. The Spurs, get this, are giving up less than 90 points a game. They have the number one scoring defense in the NBA. But the Warriors are 20-0.
I like the fact that the Spurs have lost four games this year. But yet they're five games back of Golden State.
I know. And every year we do this with the Western Conference, right? The Western Conference is so good, and these are deep teams. Now, if you look at it this year, you know, the Rockets are struggling. You know, Portland lost LaMarcus Aldridge. They used to be around in that conversation. The Pelicans were a playoff team. Now they're a bottom basement feeder. You've got Minnesota with a losing record as the eighth seed. And I know we're early. But, hey, the Thunder have got Durant and Westbrook healthy. Memphis is still a good defensive team. Dallas is better than what people thought. The Clippers are still the Clippers. They still got talent. And the Golden State Warriors are 20-0. This is something we should be paying attention to. Because, look, we did this last week with the comparison to the 96 Bulls and whatnot. The Golden State Warriors... this is a kind of run that you should celebrate in sports. This is a kind of run that's fun in sports. Look, I don't know if they get 72. Again, I've seen things in the NBA where once you get into December, once the season starts to drag a little bit, there is a lull. It's like baseball, right? They always talk about the dog days of summer in baseball. You can be really hot in April and really hot in May, and everything's rolling. It starts getting hot, and then you start getting a little lazy, and things happen, and things start falling apart. But I like this Warriors team, and I've said this so many times in the times I get to see them. Every game seems to be on an intense level. They really do want to win these games. Now, you may say, well, of course they do. No. That's not how it usually goes in the NBA. It is about pacing. It is about monitoring minutes. It is about some teams give up when they're down double digits in the fourth quarter. No need to expend any energy. That does happen. It's like a tennis player tanking a set, right? And sometimes you got to do that in order to get back on the back end. And you see teams do this all the time. I used to cover the Nuggets, saw this constantly. Team would come in, and really what happened in Denver a lot, because if you were an East Coast team, you would be starting some five-game West Coast trip, and you usually started in Oklahoma City, or maybe you'd hit Texas, or maybe you'd be in Phoenix. But Denver was a one-stop altitude game, run you out of the building type of atmosphere, and some of these teams just did not want to pull that off. So you would get a game where it would be Denver would be up by 10 or 11 or 12 in the second half. And you could just see the other team going, hey, we ain't pulling this off. We still got to go to LA to play the Lakers and the Clippers. And we still got to go up and play Sacramento. And we still got to play. So you didn't get, You'd see them just kind of fall apart. With Golden State, you don't get that. You get this intensity every night that they're on this mission to win every game or give you the best bang for your buck. So that if you're living in Charlotte or you're living in Orlando or you're living in Atlanta and Golden State's coming to your town, you can watch them play and you can get the best possible game that they can put together. They're 20-0. And get this, if they do win 73 games, this is, Luke Walton isn't the coach on record, which is really sad. They've got to change this. Because this is too historic to be to have Luke Walton not associated with this in some way. He shouldn't be an asterisk to this record, right? I mean, this should be on him if they should get this, they should get the mark. So look, there's a lot not to like about the NBA at times. The Eastern Conference is still pretty bad. But the Western Conference may not be as strong, but the Golden State Warriors are the team you got to watch for. That is fun.
What's really good for the Warriors is the fact that a lot of these games, they're blowing teams out. So Steph Curry, like tonight or last night, if you want to say, he's not playing these fourth quarters. I mean, I bet you he sat out almost three games just on fourth quarters alone.
Absolutely. That's the great thing about it. I don't know what his minutes were in the fourth, but from what I heard,
I don't think he played in the fourth. Once he hit
40, he was done.
Yeah.
I think that came either late in the third or early in the fourth. That's incredible.
Yeah, he got his 40th point on the, I think, a buzzer beater three to end the third, giving him 28 points in the third quarter.
Brilliant. Absolutely. He's averaging almost 32 points a night. And you know what? It's not a ball hog thing either. I know if you go through the depth chart in the shot chart in the third quarter, he took all the shots. But they do balance. They are a balanced team. This isn't a one-man show where you're like, "Oh, it's just Steph Curry throwing up everything." They do get contributions from almost everybody. It's a fun team to watch. They are the thing to like in this league.
Who do you even compare Steph Curry to?
It is hard because he's not. He is such an important part of a larger machine where he is the star of the squad without question. Right. But there's so many other good players around him. But he is hard to peg. You are right about that.
I kind of combined the two guys for him. My two guys were Allen Iverson, the way he can take the ball to the hole, but Iverson took a little more contact, but Steph Curry can do that little floater like Iverson did. But then his other part of his game is like Ray Allen when he was young.
Yeah, Ray Allen's a good one. I like the Allen Iverson comparison.
Like,
I
feel like if you merge Ray Allen and Allen Iverson, that's what you'd get in Steph Curry.
He is so fun. This is a great team. Great team at 20-0.
And they have a five game, or they finish up their road trip, five straight games on the road, and then they go back home, I believe, for six. And that's including a home game on Christmas Day against the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Oh, I pray to the good basketball gods above they're unbeaten when they hit that game. I don't know if they can, though. I don't know if they can finish this road trip without a loss.
Here's their... At least a road trip. Toronto, Brooklyn, Indiana, Boston, Milwaukee.
Here's how this is going to work. If I'm Nostradamus and I'm predicting the loss for the Golden State Warriors, this is where it comes. It comes at Brooklyn. It comes on the day after you get in a really good, fun battle with Toronto. I bet you they win that game on Saturday at Toronto, but I bet it's a doozy. It is fun. It is a war. They're into it. The Raptors are into it. It is everything you want in a regular season game. It feels like a playoff game. It'll have that atmosphere. They have to go right down to Brooklyn to play the Nets. Right. And I bet you that's where the gas just is gone.
It's the back end of it.
That's the back end. Exactly. It's never the game that's tough. You can get up for the game. When you're on these road trips, it never catches you on the marquee games. It always catches you on some slub team that you have to play the next night that you're just not, you just, I'm out. I'm out of gas. I mean, Curry could play 39 minutes in that game against the Raptors, score 50 points. I mean, it could be one of those kind of nights where it just has a really good feel to it. But the game afterwards is watch out for that one, because that's where you could run out of gas. Seriously. That's my Nostradamus prediction. And plus, because Brooklyn is terrible.
They really are very
bad. I mean, they're atrocious. But you watch, Brooklyn will just give them some sort of game and they'll go, all right, I'm tired.
That Pacers game will be fun. They've been playing really well.
Pacers have been playing really well. They have been playing good.
Clippers tonight, I believe. Or it's not over.
I would be very surprised if the Warriors leave this road trip with unbeaten, because we just know. I mean, even the best teams that we saw in our lifetime couldn't pull that off. These road trips are meant to get you beat up a little bit. That's what you go on them for. I used to think that the miracle of miracles was how, even as good as the San Antonio Spurs were, when they go on that rodeo trip in February, how in God's name do they lose one or just two games on those trips? I mean, and again, we're talking about Spurs teams that were championship quality, yet those road trips are brutal. And yet Greg Popovich gets them to just lose a game or two. Some years they've gone, you know, with one or two losses, that's it. On that massive month-long trip.
The Bulls have always done that on their circus trip, it's called, because the circus comes to Chicago and kicks them and the Blackhawks out of the United Center. And they've done this for, I want to say, 20-plus years. And the old Bulls, the championship Bulls, they'd go out west for, like you said, 3 weeks, and they would come back, sometimes not even losing a game. And you're like,
I know.
How do they do this?
How do you do this? Because again, even the guys who've been in the league forever go, these road trips eat you alive.
Exactly.
They tear you up. 800-777-2907. All right, coming up, some college football news. Georgia, former Georgia coach Mark Richt has gone down to Miami. We'll talk about that. And South Carolina may have their guy. And if it is, I'm a hypocrite. Next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Well, Miami hit a home run today by hiring Mark Richt. They got the best guy available. They got the perfect candidate available. Now, is he the perfect coach? No. Is he the perfect coach that's looking for a job? Yes. Miami needs a coach like Mark Richt, who recruits very well. That's the key to Miami. Can't lose players to Jim McElhane. You can't lose players up north Tallahassee to Jimbo Fisher. Again, we've said it over and over again. In fact, they say it over and over again. You got to build the state of Miami. Mark Richt is from Miami. Was a backup quarterback there. Grew up in Boca Raton. He knows the area. He'll recruit there. Lord knows he recruited there when he was at Georgia, for crying out loud. He got those South Florida kids to come up to Athens. And those South Florida kids probably thought Athens was like going to play in Alaska. But he got them up there. He'll do great things for the Hurricanes. Now, the question is, will he do enough good things for the Hurricanes? Miami needs a reality check, okay? And I know you want to be the program that it's only about national championships. We have a rich history. That's all we'll accept. Nothing less than bringing us back to the glory that we deserve. But Miami needs a reality check here. I think those days are gone. And instead of looking at trying to climb back up the mountain, forget the mountain and just start climbing up the next mountain. Stop trying to... The more you have Michael Urban hanging around and Warren Sapp hanging around and the Blades hanging around making comments about the glory of the U and how this is unacceptable at the U and this is the U can't stand for any of this and the U can't stand for any of that, you are losing the battle before you've even started the war. Mark Richt is going to lose some games. That's what he did at Georgia. The key, though, is in the SEC, losing a game or two like that can kill you. In the ACC, it might be good enough. You've got to let Mark Richt do what he does best. He'll recruit the hell out of South Florida. He will make people want to go there. He will make quarterbacks want to go there. But you cannot let the powers of the alumni get into that program and start reminding that program what that used to be. Save it for when they're winning again. make it a positive thing when they're winning and they're leading the ACC and they're ranked in the top five. And if that day ever comes, yes, bring back everybody. Bring back Miami royalty. Let them go into the Hurricane program and let them talk that up. That's what they should do. But Mark Richt will work. The problem with Mark Richt is, yeah, you know, he will drive you nuts. He drove Georgia fans crazy by having a strong team that was in the top five in recruiting constantly and then finding a way to lose a game on a crazy October Saturday to a weaker Tennessee team or a South Carolina team or LSU or somebody along those lines. Richt is going to do that in Miami. But I believe that he will have that program playing pretty good football. Look, there's no way you go to Georgia and coach there for 15 years and be one of the better teams in the SEC where you lead a team to 10 wins. If he wins the bowl game, they'll have 10 wins and lose your job because you're not quite good enough. If you tell me that that guy can't win at Miami, you're kidding yourself. Miami is loaded, loaded with high school talent. All he has to do is corral them into Coral Gables. And when you bring in a guy that grew up in that area, he knows those schools, he knows that team, he's been a Cane, he knows the history, he knows what it's like. He can go into the living room of those kids' parents, and if they're South Floridians, if they're Miami residents, if they knew what it was like back in the 80s, if they remember what it was like in the 2000s, if they remember Howard Schnellenberger, if they remember Dennis Erickson and Jimmy Johnson and all of that, if they remember those guys, then Richt wins the war. Because he can go in there and he can pitch Miami like nobody else can pitch Miami. Dan Mullen can't do that. Dan Mullen wouldn't have been able to do that. Greg Schiano would not have been able to do that. The other guys that were on the interview list for the Canes. But Mark Richt can. He can go in there and tell them, you remember when we did this. You remember when we did that. And those parents will remember the Miami Pride. Look, you don't have to go back to that You documentary. Those of you who were around during that time, that was a very, very, very proud city. When Miami won those national championships in the 80s. Very proud city. It was a city that was depicted in Miami Vice and all that other stuff. You know, and here were the Miami Hurricanes owning that town and saying to the rest of the country, screw you, we know what we're doing. We are who we are. You don't like us, screw us. You don't like us because you aren't us. Mark Richt can help those parents remember those good old days and in return get those kids to head over to Coral Gables. Great hire by Miami. Just leave them alone. Give them some peace. We'll talk to Brock Murphy next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue through the night tonight. All right, looking ahead to the weekend of college football. A lot of championship games and conferences. Other teams closing out the regular season. So we bring in Brock Murphy from Lindy Sports to go over the games over the weekend. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, Tony. How are you?
Good, good. All right, let's start in the SEC where Alabama is taking on Florida. And I don't expect the Gators to put up much of a fight against Alabama. But when you see this game, is there any chance Florida can do anything offensively against this Alabama defense?
Well, yeah, right. There's the line of scrimmage that people are going to be focused on. I'll tell you this. You didn't ask about the Florida defense, and it is a good, solid unit. They do have cornerbacks who can lock folks down. They do have the ability to control and do good things on the line of scrimmage. So I think that's important for us to realize as we go over to the other side. Yeah, I think it's a mismatch, Alabama's defense versus that Florida offense. But I think Florida's defense is going to keep this thing kind of close. And if, the Alabama offense gets a little bit sloppy, I don't think this is going to be the blowout that some people are thinking it's going to be. I think Florida's going to hang in there. Their defense keeps them in game. But ultimately, I think their inability to really move the football against Alabama's defense will make a difference in the late third quarter, fourth quarter, might be 10 points or so. But I think this is going to be closer than people think for quite a while.
No one has been able to stop Derrick Henry, but if Florida was to was able to somewhat neutralize him in this game, is that what is Alabama's offense outside of Henry? Is it very threatening or is it just ordinary?
Well, and you know, there you go, right? I mean, there's the beauty of Florida having a Vernon Hargraves, you know, I mean, a really good defensive backfield, but particularly at the corners where they can lock down Alabama's top two receivers who, you know, they're good players. They haven't had to tote the load. They don't have an Amari Cooper this year, and Cooper certainly, you know, I think is, as we go to the air, an average quarterback, certainly not one that you would put among the nation's elite in terms of being able to carry a team and through the air. So when you have that ability, then you free up those other nine guys to do some pretty important things, to do things like stop Derrick Henry. You know, what you've seen from Alabama is they do get a little bit multiple, but they tend to pound, tend to be kind of that frying pan to the face. And by the third quarter, things finally start to crumble with respect to a defensive wall. But Florida, I think, has the horses to be able to hang in there and trade blows. So, you know, with those two guys at the corner, I wouldn't say that it's a foregone conclusion that Henry's going to have another spectacular game. Certainly for Florida, you got to sell out against that run, and you've got to make Coker beat them. Maybe he does it. They really haven't had the need to go to the air and really test those wide receivers. So this might be the game when we find out the answer to that very question.
Again, Brock Murphy joins us from Lindy Sports as we go over the games this weekend. A lot of championship games in the conferences, and including in the ACC. Here's Clemson, who has been going through the whole season and getting games, you know, emotional wins against Notre Dame and Florida State. But here's this North Carolina team that a lot of people weren't really paying attention to, and they've got this dynamic offense now, and now they're in the top 10. So the natural wonder is this team now capable of being able to upset the Clemson Tigers? How do you see this North Carolina team in relation to what Clemson's done this year?
Yeah, I think the most dangerous thing about North Carolina is, you know, they got one loss this year. They have talent in a lot of different places. They short of this defense. But to me, the most dangerous thing about them is they've got nothing to lose. This is a team literally riding a whole bunch of momentum going into this game. They can lay it all on the line. Nobody's expecting anything from them. So they can play the underdog role. They can pound their chest and say, give me my respect, and go out there and you know, what we're finding out is it was a defense that underperformed in the last couple of seasons, but certainly with Chizik, what we found is, you know, given some discipline, given some gap control, given the right kind of leadership, they had the material in place, and it's the kind of material that you have expected out of North Carolina. This is a team that we tend to forget made its mark on defense. You know, your Marvin Austins came out of there. I mean, there's some great players that have come out of the defensive front seven at North Carolina. The material's in place, and now we go to, you know, Marquise Williams. He's an upperclassman. You know, he's able to do a lot of things with his feet and go through the air. They've got some dangerous skill guys out there, Switzer among them. So I think that the most dangerous thing, really, honestly, is that they just go out there and lay it all on the line, and nobody expects anything from them. So Clemson better be prepared for a war, better be prepared defensively to get stretched out, better be prepared to play that 11-on-11 game with Williams and keep him under control, because if they want to ride the stock of their offense all the way through this championship game, I think North Carolina is going to get a few stops here and there, and I think they're going to score some points too. So this is one, again, I think this one could be very, very close.
And this is a team, maybe not the best team they faced this season, Clemson, because they did play Notre Dame. But for Brett Venables and that defense, is this the best offense that they're going to play this year?
Well, I think absolutely. You know, they've got the ability to do some things with the running back position where, you know, this is, again, it's not the most lethal set of running backs, but they're productive. You know, Williams is productive in and of himself, so that you can do your kind of option attack if you need to, your zone read, things like that. And then again, they've got some really dangerous guys on the outside. Some of them are small and shifty. Some of them are big guys that are going to go up and get the ball on third down and eight. So I think you can expect North Carolina to keep positive momentum, keep ahead of the chains. And I think they're going to do it often against this Clemson team. And I think you're right. I don't know that I can say that Clemson has faced this kind of an attack with that kind of personnel, and that includes Notre Dame.
Yeah, and this is going to be a good game, fun game to watch, because North Carolina, they score, and they have a very quick offense. They can definitely put some points on the board. All right, let's go to the Big Ten, where Iowa is taking on Michigan State. And I find this interesting because, look, Iowa was kind of this under-the-radar team for a while, and everyone's kind of wondering, who are the Hawkeyes? Where are they? Well, here they are at the end of the season playing for the Big Ten title. Michigan State, we've always known. We've always got a feeling for. When you look at the Spartans this season, is this the team that we kind of expected? And for Iowa, kind of the same question. Are we seeing what we thought we were going to get at the beginning of the season?
I don't think so. You know, in Michigan State, I think we expected that this is a team that's going to really kind of go through without much resistance the Big Ten, and this is a team that has won their share of games in the Big Ten, but they have all been with great resistance. You know, this isn't a team that's dominating opponents. It's a team that's surviving through games. And so, you know, look, champions win games. They figure out a way to win, and you got to give that to D'Antonio and his crew. Got to give it to Cook's leadership. But I think people expected a little more out of this offense, and I think people underestimated what they were going to lose when they lost their set of cornerbacks who could lock people down and free up the rest of the nine. I mean, defensively, I think people have been a lot more productive against that Spartan defense than had been expected, although when they've needed to in the big games, they've been able to put things together and stop drives. So, you know, with Iowa, again, this is a team that nobody expected anything out of. I think Ferentz has a special group of guys. They're lunchbox guys. I mean, this is a team that's not full of five-star folks. You know, you don't know the names of most of the people on this Iowa team, but they play really, really well together, and that's a dangerous combination because, again, they take this field and really they're undefeated, but no one's expecting anything out of them, don't believe they can win. So they lay it all on the line, too, with sort of a we've got nothing to lose attitude. Let's go, you know, get another win and stay undefeated. So I think for Iowa, again, a lunchbox approach is, you know, we're going to try and stay ahead of the chains. I go back to where I said that with North Carolina. I think you're going to expect a little bit more out of that game to go backwards for a moment so that you keep the Clemson offense on the sideline. And I think for Iowa, a little bit of the same thing. Just ground it out. Ground it out. You know, don't make your mistakes. I think all these games really have a great opportunity to be very, very close games. And this one, I think, is going to be closer to 3 yards in a cloud of dust than any of the others.
Yeah, absolutely, with Iowa's running attack. But when you look at, you know, here's the thing. I hear people complain about Iowa saying, well, you know, they're not playing the toughest. They didn't get to play the toughest of schedules. But that doesn't mean you don't pass the eyeball test. That doesn't mean we can't watch you and see a top four team of the nation, right? I mean, it's 12-0 is 12-0.
No, I totally agree with you. And I mean, at the end of the day, you know, they're Big Ten teams. So here's the problem. You know, if you have that argument against Iowa, then you got to have that argument against Ohio State. I mean, against Iowa, you got to have that argument against Ohio State and Michigan State and Michigan, right? I mean, it's right. The same conference. So it's funny how somehow that's got purchased as against one team, but somehow or another that doesn't resonate against the common opponents within that same conference. And I'm not sure I buy that. And you're right. I mean, for Iowa, all we can do, we said this against Boise State years ago. We said it against some of the other non-power conference teams, that all I can do is go and beat everybody on my schedule. And I think for Iowa, it's just a story that's kind of charming because they're some of the last, they're among the last remaining undefeated. We have to now pay attention to them. And I think, you know, we use the term litmus test a lot in the beginning of the season when we see that teams are going to have to live out, you know, preseason expectations. Well, for Iowa, I think we really are. We're going to figure out what they're made of because finally this is a game where there should be some tension. Finally, it's a game where there is something on the line. I think they can go out there and play more loose because nobody expects anything out of them. But this is championship time, and if you're going to go undefeated and get into the playoffs, this is the first game that I think you'll see some of those players who have played kind of loose start to press.
The door is not completely closed on Stanford getting into the four. There's a little bit of light coming through in case chaos ensues with at least Clemson and Alabama. But they've got to go up against a USC team that's now led by Clay Helton as he now gets the job. In terms of where USC is heading and what he's been able to do, what do you like about where the Trojans are in this game against Stanford?
Well, you know, again, same kind of thing, right? I mean, this is a team that kind of had a rebirth in the middle of the season. I mean, we know that Sarkisian gets let go in the middle of the season, but we also know it wasn't one single event that led to that. I mean, we can just imagine what the locker room conditions were like, what the characteristics of that locker room were prior to all that. It had to have been chaotic within that team house and all that, and suddenly it's let loose and there's oxygen in the air Yeah, under Helton, all of a sudden, I think you've seen fundamentals come into place. I think you've seen a team come together. All that bad air got let out, and now I think they're breathing, and they're a dangerous team. Fantastic wide receivers, you know, good solid play out of the quarterback. Among the most talented running backs in the country. Maybe they don't have the biggest numbers, but they certainly have the capacity on any given play to break something and go to the house. And, you know, good solid defenders as well. And when you look at Stanford, it's really interesting to break them down, right? If we look at McCaffrey, he's also the leading receiver on that team, and at that with only 37 catches this year. So that tells you a little bit about the passing attack for Stanford, which I think makes things a little more simple, if not necessarily easy, as USC prepares for them. Another interesting thing, USC leads the country or is among the nation's leaders in turnover margins. So they're doing things right on both sides of the ball. They're playing with discipline. Again, I think some of that is because of this new fresh oxygen. Stanford so far this year has produced only 11 turnovers. So it's not a kind of defense that gets really, really opportunistic. And I think in a game like this, if they play their typical performance and the defense doesn't get opportunistic, I think that Stanford's going to find themselves behind that turnover margin in this game. And I don't know that they're good enough to play a talented team as USC and get away with it. So I actually expect USC to win this one.
You know, I don't. When people talk about who they like and who they don't like in college football, I don't care if you don't like USC as a team, but you got to feel good for the seniors of this program. What they've gone through their time at Troy, Lane Kiffin, Ed Orgeron, Steve Sarkisian, and now Clay Helton. That is an incredible, difficult moment for seniors, and now they're in the championship game. So I give them all the credit in the world for four coaches during their time at USC, and now they're playing for a conference championship.
Oh, I agree with you. Absolutely agree with you. And, you know, it's an opportunity for them for redemption and put a great punctuation mark on a chaotic time, and I think they're going to do it.
Brock Murphy, Lindy Sports on Yahoo Sports Radio as we go over the college football games. By the way, before we let you go, do you like Kirby Smart being hired at Georgia?
You know, it's a move that's been talked about for not just this season down here in this region. It's something that people have talked about. You know, Rick's seat has been hot for how long? You know,
forever.
Part of half a decade, and for the last few years, the talk's always been, well, I think Georgia's going to get Kirby Smart. I think they're going to get Kirby Smart. He's got ties to the school, so it makes sense. But for Georgia, you know, I don't know. This is a guy who certainly learned the process, but just as we've seen with Belichick and some of Saban's other staffers, it doesn't always translate into immediate profits as the first couple of years of a head coach. We've seen McElwain and what he's doing at Florida, but he went to Colorado State and took some lumps for, you know, before he did that. And I don't know, for Georgia, for them to get away from Mark Richt and the personality and the character of who was in charge of that team and place it on the shoulders of Kirby Smart to come in and be the savior when he's got to just learn, how do I even be a head coach? Which means also he's got to give up some of the control of the defense that he wants to go in there and improve. You know, again, litmus test, it remains to be seen. I think there's a lot of enthusiasm there. He's going to ride that wave. But it's an interesting chair that he takes over. And while he doesn't take over the victorious percentage of a Bear Bryant, of a Joe Paterno, he does take over a gigantic vacuum that's left by Rick's departure. So I think that's going to be awful important, and I'm not sure who would come in there and be able to fill that in a satisfactory way.
We were talking about this yet last night. Scott Frost at Oregon, he goes to UCF, and UCF was winless in 2015. So he gets to go in there as a young coach, get his first time coaching job at a place that has got no expectations whatsoever. Kirby Smart is walking into the flames of the SEC as a head coach with a team that may have 10 wins when this is all done and just let their coach go. I can't imagine a harder, more difficult step to make than that.
I completely agree with you. You know, he has the resources to keep the thing going. So if it doesn't go, I mean, really, it's going to be difficult to lay the blame for anything other than his inability to effectively lead as the head coach of a team that, like you said, won 10 games last year. You know, and going back to you at UCF, this was a team that at the beginning of the season, a lot of people had winning that entire division.
Yes, absolutely.
So there's some material in place there at UCF. You know, a lot of bad things happened in that team house. And I think as we consider the USC and the oxygen that was given as all of that bad air was let out, I think Frost walks into a pretty good situation in that conference.
I do, too. UCF's got some facilities, too. So, Brock Murphy, Lindy Sports, love you, man. Great talking to you. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Tony. Take care.
You got it. All right, conference weekend coming up in college football. There's some other games that are out there. I know Texas is playing Baylor to close out the season and whatnot because there's no conference championship there. And there's some other ones around. I think you know, Houston's in their conference championship in the American Athletic Conference. 800-777-2907 is the telephone number as we continue through the night talking some college football. We are going to get into some of the NFL as well as we hit into some critical games coming up. And I know with five games left, it's hard to say that, but there's got to be some teams that have got to get some separation. We'll look into that next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, sometime tonight, we got to figure out which of these 6-5 teams are a fraud. Can we do that? Are we going to be able to sort this out?
Oh, I think so.
Have you looked at the standings and seen how many teams are 6-5 or 5-6?
It's crazy.
It's nuts.
And you can't even call it, you know, everyone likes to use the word parody.
It's
not parody. It's bad football.
It's just bad football.
Everyone's just beating each other and they all end up right in the middle.
I'm looking at this going, all right, let's put this in perspective here, how crazy this season has gone so far. You've got your elites, right? Denver's been on top forever. New England's been on top of their division forever. Cincinnati, same thing. Indianapolis is trying to fight off these lousy teams below them, including Houston, by the way, who I know is playing better. But here's the problem I have. If the playoffs started today, the Texans and the Chiefs would both be in the playoffs, and these teams were dead, I tell you, just a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't that long. This wasn't a team like at 6-5 that was like, oh, they're pretty good. They just lose a couple of games here and there. But the Texans were embarrassingly awful. They had two games in which they gave up 40-plus points to Atlanta and Miami. They looked like they didn't deserve any sort of recognition, and Hard Knocks was a joke. Then they had a bye week, went to Cincinnati, beat the Bengals, and they've been cruising ever since. The Kansas City Chiefs were playing a very, very tough schedule, but they have now won 5 in a row. And get this, their next 5 games are against teams with losing records. So now I'm supposed to go, oh, now I got to be in the Chiefs? We're going to sort that all out in a little bit. Kenneth is on the line. What's up, Kenneth?
Hey, Tony, I appreciate you taking my call, my man.
Thank you, my man.
The reason why I was calling is, which coach that got hired by a new team would you consider the most intriguing, and which coaching hire do you like?
Well, let me say this. I like the Clay Helton hire, and I know this may not count because he's the interim coach and he's been now, you know, given the job, but I like that hire by USC. I think this is what they need. They need a guy that has shown he can coach, that the players really like. They just need it. I like this hire. I know a lot of people don't, because USC could have anybody they want, but I think Pat Hayden did a good job with this one. The one though that I said this earlier tonight, that I think is going to make a huge impact in the next year or two, is Mark Richt at Miami. I think he knows that team, he knows that area, and I think he's a great recruiter anyway. He got people coming in to going to Georgia from all parts of the Southeast, including South Florida. So not only was he recruiting down in South Florida for Georgia, which again, for those kids, it's a good haul up to Athens, but he got them to go there. He can recruit in, he can keep that fence around the state of Miami. I think he's going to do great things. The one that I'm intrigued though, the one that I'm really curious about, the one I'm really want to make to know how it's going to work out, is Kirby Smart at Georgia. Kirby Smart's name's been going around the Southeastern Conference as a head coach for a while. People have always pegged Kirby Smart as eventually getting one of these gigs. Well, he's got the biggest gig that's available in the conference in a long time. He's not taking over a ripped apart Florida team, or he's not taking apart a South Carolina team that's swimming in the sewer right now, or a Tennessee team that's been ripped apart by Derek Dooley. He's taking over a possible 10-win Georgia team that is demanding him to win now. Not tomorrow, not after breakfast, now. And I think that makes this very intriguing.
And before I go, I'm going Nostradamus again.
Okay.
As far as Golden State is concerned, I see two possible spots that they could lose. December 23rd against Utah. If not there, then probably Christmas Day against Cleveland.
All right. I will keep those in mind, man. Thanks for the call, brother. Appreciate it. All right. Coming up, we will sort out those teams. We'll also give you our Heisman poll. We're getting closer and closer to that awards day. You know, that two-hour-long extravaganza where they finally open up the envelope. Yeah, we got the poll for you coming up next hour. Yahoo Sports Radio.